And once again, Merry Christmas on behalf of everyone here at Coast to Coast AM for you. I hope you had an enjoyable one. And if for some reason you are just by yourself, well, you're part of the program. And that's why we go live on every holiday, just for you. We're going to come back. We'll take your phone calls, your favorite holiday movies, and tell us why next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Stephen Choate with us, of course. Stephen, your book, Hollywood Stories, still out there, still available?
It sure is. It's called Hollywood Stories, Short Entertaining Anecdotes About the Stars and Legends of the Movies, and it's got over 1,000 anecdotes in it. Big cast of characters, movie stars, producers, directors, television shows, and it's available everywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and the website is really easy, HollywoodStories.com. One word, HollywoodStories.com.
All right, we're going to take phone calls with you now this hour. Split show for you tonight. We'll go to John in St. Louis, somewhere out here on the wild card line. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hi. My favorite Christmas movie is Christmas Carol.
Me too. Those are classics.
Yeah.
Classics. Which one did you like? The real old one?
Yeah, the real old one.
Yeah, me too. That one had some magic to it, you know, all of it based on Dickens. But when they put it together for film, they did a great job on that one, Steve.
You mean with Alistair Sim?
I'd like that version.
Yeah, yep. Somehow that one comes off older, I think, because it's just as a more atmospheric presentation than the first one did, the MGM one did, which the 38 one, which was more of a family film. I still like the 1970 one with Albert Finney. I mean even though, you know, the music in that probably isn't as imaginative as some musicals like West Side Story or something like that, I think that one was really well done too. So I like them all, actually. I could just tell you a quick story.
Sure.
You know, George C. Scott, he kept his distance from the other actors when he was making his Christmas Carol. He was hard to get to know. And there was one time he was making the movie The Day of the Dolphin. And he was he threw a party for the rest of the cast on his yacht. And there were these two big guys there. And one of his co-stars, Fritz Weaver, said, "Why do you have these two big hulking guys here?" And he said, "For protection." And he said, "Well, who do you need protection from, George?" He said, "You don't understand. It's to protect other people from me."
I love it. Next up, Gerald, Oklahoma City. There you go, Gerald. Merry Christmas to you, Gerald.
Merry Christmas, guys. And by the way, George, just a quick note. You're the phone call from your mom last night made my Christmas, because I lost my mom in 2001. My dad was a Marine on Iwo Jima. I lost him in 2008. And your mom's voice sounded just like my mom's. And, I mean, it was... It just filled my heart with joy to hear that phone call with you and your mom last night.
Thank you. It broke me up. She's quite a girl, man. You can tell just with her. She's spunky, isn't she?
Absolutely. She just reminded me of my mom, and I'm so glad that you still have her at Christmas time. That's just absolutely wonderful. I just had one little comment about my favorite movie, and I wanted to get your guest thoughts on it.
Sure.
And I had two sources that I wanted to quote here, and it might help him. He probably already knows this, but I was kind of a collector of radio and radio shows and radio history. And the part of the Christmas Story, Ralphie gets his decoder from Radio Orphan Annie, and they used the right decoder for 1940. The envelope wasn't quite right, but the main thing was, as he goes up and he decodes the message, and he finds out it's a commercial, a crummy commercial. Be sure to drink your Ovaltine.
Right.
And I had a friend of mine who said that a lot of those kids wrote all those, you know, those decoded messages out in spiral notebooks or whatever. And they found some of those things from Captain Midnight, Orphan Annie through the years at play markets. And they've got years of these decoded messages, and they never would have put a commercial in one of those decoded messages. And a friend of mine actually spoke to Shirley Bell a few years ago, and she played Orphan Annie from 1930 to 1940 on the radio in Chicago. And he asked her about that. And would that have ever happened? And she said, "No, no way." And she passed away a couple of years ago. But I wanted to know if your guest had any comments about that, and I'll listen on the radio. Thank you so much for being live, George. We really appreciate you.
Okay, Gerald. What do you think, Stephen?
Well, I don't think they probably would, but I can't say for sure that they wouldn't do anything commercial like that. But, you know, I mean, obviously the story is written by a guy who was great at exaggerating things, Gene Shepard. So it fit in with the movie, even if it isn't historically accurate. I mean, because his memory of childhood was, you know, may more humorous than realistic sometimes, I think. And, you know what it reminds me of? The story about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, where Robert May had written that for Montgomery Ward in 1939, because Montgomery Ward was tired of buying coloring books and thought, let's make our own little booklet to give out. And, it was very popular, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And then Robert May's wife got sick about 7 years later, and he couldn't pay for the hospital bills. And he went to Montgomery Ward and asked for the Rudolph rights back, and they gave it to him. And, you know, that's worth a lot of money. And then his brother-in-law ended up writing the song, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and it became a much bigger thing. And both he and his brother-in-law did great by it. So, you know, that thing that the gentleman mentioned reminded me of that, but I don't know of any commercial decoded messages being given out by companies back at that time, but it could have happened, I guess.
Who was the one who sang Rudolph? Was it Burl Ives?
No, it was Gene Autry.
Gene Autry, that's right.
But Burl Ives narrated the Rankin and Bass special as the Snowman, and it was great for him because he did get some royalties on some of the songs like Silver and Gold, and he had just lost his house due to tax problems a few years earlier. And what Rankin and Bass did was they had a tradition that every time they made one of those specials, they would have somebody like Jimmy Durante on the Frosty the Snowman or Fred Astaire on Santa Claus is Coming to Town. They kept that tradition with the famous narrators helping to tell the stories.
Let's go to Reading, Massachusetts. Mark's with us. Hey, Mark, go ahead. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to George, Ian, and Art Bell and all the Coast to Coast family for one of your biggest fans.
Thank you, Mark.
But not any bigger than anybody else. And before I ask my question relevant to the Christmas movies, George, is there any chance that you can get this guest back on later in the year to talk about other movies?
I'm sure we can do that. Absolutely.
Because
Stephen,
I have so many questions about movies that I would love to ask. But I would like, Stephen...
Yes, sir.
Yes. I would like to ask your impression. The first three movies you guys talked about, the Charlie Brown, Miracle on 34th Street, and It's a Wonderful Life, are all saved on my computer so that I could watch them at any time during the last month. But I have a question about another movie that you haven't mentioned yet. And what is your opinion, impressions, or do you have any backstories about one of my fourth most favorite movies is it's National Lampoon's Christmas special Christmas Vacation,
Yeah.
I love that.
Off the air. Thank you very much.
That's a classic, too.
Yeah, well, Chevy Chase had a lot to do with the direction of that. It was Chevy Chase who called up Randy Quaid to play Cousin Ernie. And, you know, for Randy Quaid, that became his most identified with role. And yet at the same time, I think it's a role that he kind of regrets because you know, he wanted to be taken more seriously as an actor and probably got typecast because of that, at least in people's minds. But you know, as far as I know, that one went pretty smoothly. I know that Beverly D'Angelo always said that every time she started a new vacation movie with Chevy Chase, they would be like long lost friends, and by the end of the movie, they'd be fighting like cats and dogs. And yet they keep doing it all the time,
like real husband and wife.
Doing the commercials now. And of course, you know, so many people in that movie went on to do just, you know, amazing things. I mean, Seinfeld, Everybody Loves Raymond, and The Big Bang Theory, they had three of the major actors in that film ended up participating in those shows. So, I mean, obviously that turned out great. And they're still talking about another one where they go to the moon, or at least Beverly D'Angelo suggested that to Chevy Chase. I don't know if Chevy Chase is you know, thrilled about that. But now that it looks like he's not going to be on the show Community anymore, maybe he'll go for that idea.
Were those profitable movies, the Vacation movies?
Yeah, absolutely. Christmas Vacation did really, really well at the time, although it was not a very well-reviewed movie.
It was all slapstick.
Yeah, Roger Ebert gave it 2 out of 4 stars. So I think, I think they did. They wouldn't be still using those characters if they didn't do very well. And of course, it was a nice thing for Johnny Galecki, who was living at the time at the Oakwood Apartments, where a lot of parents bring budding child actors to live in Los Angeles, and got the call and couldn't believe that they wanted him because he had no comedy experience, but got a lot out of it. And it's just too bad. Things have kind of gone south for Randy Quaid lately, so hopefully he'll, get things back on track.
Last time, what was he, still hiding out in Canada or something?
As far as I know,
that's a bizarre story. Yep, it sure is.
Yeah.
Let's go to Marilyn in Collinsville, Connecticut, first-time caller. Marilyn, you're up on the air with us. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to talk about two of my favorite movies, actually.
All right.
One of them... it's not really a Christmas movie, but it has a lot of snow in it. It's McCabe and Mrs. Miller.
Oh, yeah. This was Warren Beatty.
Right. And it has Leonard Cohen does the soundtrack. And right. I just like it because it has a lot of snow.
Yeah, that was during the making of that movie, I know Warren Beatty and Robert Altman didn't get along. And Robert Altman, kept doing retakes on the scene where Warren Beatty fell down in the snow, so he had to do it over and over and over and over, kind of some animosity going on there. Besides that, I don't have too many stories about that movie.
The other one is The Gift of the Magi. That's the one where the woman cuts her hair to buy the watch fob for the guy.
I remember that. Yeah.
He sells his watch.
To buy her combs.
To get a comb for her hair.
That's right.
And I think that's very touching. I was very poor the winter that I was living in the woods in a cabin heating by wood. And I got my daughter's father a pair of shoelaces for less than $1. Because he had so many knots in his shoelaces. And I was thinking of that it really is just the love behind the gift, and that was what I could afford and what he really needed.
Great stuff. The Gift of the Magi, classic type of movie and story, Stephen.
Right, right. I don't have too much on that. Next time I'm on, I'll make sure I have more on that one, but I don't have any good behind-the-scenes anecdotes on that one, I have to admit.
Do you get into Hollywood songs and things like that, or just primarily films?
Absolutely. Depending on what it is, like we talked about Rudolph and White Christmas, that was Irving Berlin.
Remember Scarlet Ribbons, Belafonte song?
No, I don't remember that one. But
oh, my gosh. Classic, Stephen. You got to listen to that.
Yeah.
The words alone will make you
Silver Bells.
Right.
From the Lemon Drop Kid, the Bob Hope movie.
Why did White Christmas make Bing Crosby such a huge star? I think that song made him, didn't it?
It was the biggest thing he ever had. I mean, he was already a pretty big star because he already had made the road movies with Bob Hope before that. But what happened was that he recorded it. It didn't do very well at first, but after the movie Holiday Inn came out, it really did well. And then he would sing it to the troops, and the troops were just so moved by it, even though Irving Berlin, when he wrote that song, was sort of making fun of Southern Californians, not having the weather change ever. But when Bing Crosby would sing it to the troops, they were just so moved. And he would stop and say, "Do you guys want me to go on with this? The last thing I want to do is make you sad." And they would say, "No, please." And it, you know. was just something that caught on, and I think it was the World War II effect of troops being overseas and missing home that really made that into the popular song that it was. And of course, later on, the original movie Holiday Inn, where White Christmas was first really the public found out about it, was redone as the musical White Christmas. And it's amazing because you think of the director of that movie, Michael Curtiz. He directed Casablanca, The Adventures of Robin Hood, probably Elvis Presley's most successful acting movie, King Creole. And yet White Christmas was the biggest hit he ever directed.
We go next to Robin in Oklahoma, east of the Rockies. Hey, Robin, go ahead. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Merry Christmas. A couple of comments. National Lampoon's, the thing with the tangled up lights, and you finally get them going, and you get the Hallelujah chorus. I swear, we get that.
Yeah. That's a classic in Christmas.
Oh, yeah. And the thing he says on the Christmas story, you used all the glue up on purpose.
Yeah.
Mine is the one George C. Scott, and that is so sad. It is just really, you know, the people under the bridge, and you know the little children under the Christmas present coat. Were they real children?
I couldn't tell you. I think so. I don't know how they did that special effect wise, but the way they did that with George C. Scott, I think they added a little bit to the Dickens dialogue, and it made it more poignant than maybe some of the earlier versions had been. He was going through a tough time at that time of his life. I think he was having marriage trouble and he was alone a lot. And I think that was reflected onto the character when he played him.
Were there some sad messages in some of these movies, Stephen?
Oh, I don't know about really sad messages. I don't, going back to Miracle on 34th Street, they had a really fun message with when they mentioned the prince, who the Russian prince in Los Angeles was based on Mike Romanoff, who ran a restaurant there called Romanoff's. A con man from Chicago, and his name was Harry Gergensen. And he used to go around telling everybody that he's a Russian prince. And he had
one of the Romanovs, huh?
Yeah, he had no money, but he'd show up at people's houses and say, his Imperial Majesty would like to rest his head on your bed, if you would agree to that. And he got a lot of Hollywood friends to give him money to start this restaurant. And people would come into the restaurant, and they would say, you're an absolute fraud. And he would just keep going with the whole thing mentioned people that he knew in Russia. And supposedly it was a real great place to go. In fact, there was one time J. Edgar Hoover was dining at Romanoff's restaurant, and a jewel thief named Swifty Morgan came up to him and said, how'd you like to buy these cufflinks? And J. Edgar Hoover said, how much do you want? I'll give you $200 for him. And he said, come on, John, the reward is worth more than that.
I love it.
So that's the type of place that it was, you know, a place where it wasn't all movie stars there. In fact, Mike,
you had all characters. Stephen, we're going to come right back with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we talk about the Book of Urantia. Make sure you're part of the program. And when we come back with Stephen Showett, we'll continue taking phone calls, favorite holiday movies on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Stephen Showett with us. Stephen, in the Miracle on 34th Street, wasn't Natalie Wood the little girl?
Yeah, she was, and she was playing in that movie. She was in Scud-a-Doo, Scud-a-Hay, and Ghost and Mrs. Muir. So that meant that she was playing a country girl, a New York girl, and an English girl all at the same time. And they said she was letter perfect. Her nickname on the set was One Take Natalie. And according to people who knew her, she really did believe in Santa Claus and would go to department stores and sit on Santa's lap and ask for presents, and was kind of surprised to see her co-star Edmund Gwenn at the Rat party without his whiskers.
How old was she, do you know?
She was 7.
7 years old.
Yeah, wow. she just was an amazing, amazing kid as far as understanding her role and her character and just blew everybody away. When they were making that movie, that was the tough. She was the last person to be cast. I mean, that was the toughest thing, finding a little girl who would be believable, not believing in Santa Claus, she came through. I mean, in a very, very big way.
Did that movie catapult her career? In that, did she continue getting roles as she got into her teens and early adult life?
I think the key to her career was really Rebel Without a Cause, where she because of her sweet image, Nicholas Ray didn't want to give her the role, and then she got into a car accident with out joyriding with some friends. And Nicholas Ray came to visit her in the hospital, and she said, "Guess what, Nick? They called me a blankety blank juvenile delinquent. Now can I have the role?" And he decided to give it to her and saw her in a whole different light. And I think that's what really got her going as perceived as an adult rather than a child star.
Great talent. Tragic ending, but great talent.
Just awful. She was going to be in the movie Thelma and Louise with Tuesday Weld,
mm-hmm.
and Tuesday Weld dropped out of the project after Natalie Wood drowned, and that movie was delayed for 10 years, and had that movie been made in 1981, at that time Brad Pitt, who was really the breakout star of that movie, was a journalism major at the University of Missouri,
sure was.
He got his big chance because it was made in 1991, and right before that, Brad Pitt's first job in Hollywood was he used to work at El Pollo Loco chicken restaurant, and he'd stand outside in a chicken suit on Sunset and La Brea trying to lure people in.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, he was a struggling guy until Thelma and Louise came along, and he ended up getting that part over people like George Clooney.
Not struggling anymore, and he's a great guy. He's very nice.
Yeah.
Let's go to Wayne in Colfax, Iowa. Welcome to the program. Hey, Wayne, thank you.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Yeah, I just wanted to go over a couple of movies I like.
Okay, sure.
Ernest Saves Christmas. Scrooge with
those.
Bill Murray. And Home Alone, of course.
Yeah.
And then when they did the Jim Carrey in The Grinch, that's instant classic right there.
Yeah.
I think of The Grinch, I think of Jim Carrey now.
Yeah, can I just say, the first story in my book, Hollywood Stories, it was a gentleman, a story told me on the tour. He was taking his family up to Universal Studios, and they were going by where Alfred Hitchcock made the movie Psycho. So the tour guide's talking about the movie and how Hitchcock shot it. All of a sudden, a man comes out from behind the Bates Motel with a wig and a dress and a knife. And everybody's laughing. Norman Bates in drag. And the tour guide says, "Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know who this man is, and he's not part of the tour." So he comes running toward the tram, raises the knife. People start screaming. And he took off the wig, and it was Jim Carrey. He was making the moon. Now, he wasn't making The Grinch at that time. He was making The Man on the Moon, but he had a little downtime, and he decided to scare everybody half to death. And then the nice part was he took pictures and signed autographs afterwards.
Not good to do that anymore. You can't do that. Bill in Charlotte, North Carolina. Go ahead, Billy.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Thank you, Bill. Good.
Merry Christmas to you all.
You too.
I have a couple of questions. There was a movie made during the 40s, during the war, about a soldier coming home where everybody was expecting him and had an old man and a family. I cannot recall the movie. I've seen it a couple of times. I've always caught it in the middle. And the other question I had was, what do you think about Patrick Stewart's portrayal of Scrooge in his version of Dickens' tale? Because I found it to be very closer to the book than a lot of other portrayals. I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I wish I knew who was in that movie. I could do better. Patrick Stewart's a great actor, and I mean, probably not his favorite for me as some of the other ones, but I mean, you know what this really sad thing is, that Charles Dickens never, his family never got compensated for all this. And when he was alive, he had to sue somebody for selling unauthorized versions of A Christmas Carol, and then he never collected any money from them, and it cost him a bundle in court costs. And
was he wealthy, or was he dirt cheap, poor?
Well, I think he was struggling. I don't know if he was dirt poor, but he definitely didn't get the full compensation for all the versions of A Christmas Carol that were selling at the time, because it was a pretty well received book. But I just don't know the name of that other movie. So I would have to find out who's in it.
When you were a tour guide, did people try to stump you?
Yeah, and my attitude was just find out something new for the next one, so you can always answer it. And also, everybody can stay in touch with me, HollywoodStories.com. I'll get the information for you sooner or later. This whole thing began because I wanted to keep the tours fresh, not just for me, but for the customers. And so the way I could do that was with material, because you can't do it with the sites. You see the same sites all the time, but the material's endless. So that's how I got the idea eventually to tell the stories anywhere. It's like trying to get every pearl out of the ocean. There's always something new to find out. And then people write new books. They came up with stories that you haven't heard before. The bibliography in my book is over 200 books, and I must have read over 500. So, and it keeps growing.
Let's go to Mankato, Minnesota. It's got to be One Eye Jack out there, isn't it? Hi, Jack.
Oh, that's good news and bad news. Yes, it is.
It is.
Good evening, guys, and a very Merry Christmas to you and your family.
How you doing?
You too, Jack.
The gentleman that was on before me asked and answered one of my questions, so I'm going to go to Plan B, if I may.
You got it.
And I've got a strange one. And, Steve, and I'm really hoping you can help me with this. And, George, you're
too.
Very, very welcome, of course. When you look at Scrooge, you've got Alistair Sim, you've got Reginald Owen, you've got Albert Finney, you've got George C. Scott, you've got Patrick Stewart, and then if you throw in Bill Murray, if you consider it the same.
And Jim Carrey.
Humbug.
Why, and my favorite movie is also the same one as you, Stephen, is A Wonderful Life. Why has that never been remade?
Well, it has, by Marlo Thomas. There was a TV.
Well, yeah, but I don't consider that even close.
But
yeah,
that's why they can't be remade. I think it's difficult to make good on something that is so good.
Well, the stars is what I'm saying. When you look at who starred in Scrooge, you're talking some of the best. Well, I mean, Alistair Sim, to say the very least, I thought was one of the best. Reginald Owen is another one of my favorites.
A great
actor. I did like the Patrick Stewart version as well. And, of course, George C. Scott, I admired him ever since the time he told him to take and tuck it from Patton, you know. But
right.
He's a great actor as well, and so is Albert Finney, but it was a musical. But when you look at A Wonderful Life, you only have it done twice. You don't have modern actors coming in and redoing it and trying to be dramatic actors to really do it with the same emphasis that it was originally done with.
In a way, not an exact way, but if you look at movies like, I think The Family Man with Nicolas Cage and One Magic Christmas with Mary Steenburgen. I think they're trying to take Wonderful Life elements and sort of redo it, but not be accused of plagiarism, at least total plagiarism. So, and of course, you know, with Dickens, I mean, you don't have to worry about copyrights and anything like that. So I think that might be one reason too. But I can't say for sure why people get inspired to remake certain things and leave other things alone. But Miracle on 34th Street has been remade a couple times. In fact, I was watching an interview with Maureen O'Hara, who, by the way, is 92, living in Idaho with her grandson and hopefully having a very Merry Christmas. And she was talking about there were three remakes of Miracle on 34th Street, and I'm happy to tell you that none of them did well. And she had a lot of glee about it, actually, that only her version was considered a classic.
Okay, Thanks, Jack. Appreciate you being part of the program. We'll take a few more calls here with Steven before we wrap things up with him. Let us go to Joe T. in Roanoke, Virginia. Joe T., go ahead.
Hi, George and Steven.
Hello.
My favorite show of all time is the Miracle on 34th Street, my favorite Christmas show. And I watch it at least four or five times every season, and I just go through every emotion when I look at it. It's an awesome movie. Yeah. I like all the other movies you're talking about, too, but The Miracle on 34th Street is my favorite.
Yeah, it was a great movie. You know, Maureen O'Hara, she was not able to travel to to Ireland during World War II, and so finally she gets back to Ireland, and then she gets this note from 20th Century Fox, this telegram, we want you to come back to the U.S. right away, and her agent, Lou Wasserman, telling her, you better do it, and she comes back furious, and then she read the script for Miracle on 34th Street, the movie they required her to be in, and she said, this might not be so bad after all, and she said it was an absolute joy to make, although they filmed a lot of that in New York City, and it was freezing, and during the parade scene, she and Edmund Gwynn had to be outside, and they were very jealous of Natalie Wood and John Payne being inside watching the parade.
What's the saddest Christmas movie you can recall?
The saddest Christmas movie?
Yeah, the one that was really emotional. I mean, like, Wonderful Life was kind of sad, but it turned out to be a great ending. Were they all good endings? Or?
I think the one Magic Christmas with Mary Steenburgen, and even though that turns out to be a happy ending with Harry Dean Stanton, I think that's about as sad as you can get. Oh, really? I think even though Christmas Carol turns out happy, I mean it's got great sadness within it. I mean, they have the one song in the Albert Finney version, Happiness, sung by the young lady that he plans to marry, and you know that he's never going to end up with her. So I think even though Scrooge is nice at the end, I think that's really carrying sadness throughout that entire show.
Let's go to Miss Penny in Heaven, Kansas, that is. Hi, Miss Penny. Hi.
Merry Christmas.
You too.
I wanted to compliment you. I am blind, and I'm in my 80s, and you paint beautiful pictures with your words.
Well, thank you.
A lot of people don't understand that, but you speak to where I can understand you, and you don't slur your words, and I can almost see what you're talking about. And, of course, I don't have anything but radio to depend on, and when you give the extra news there, you give right after, you come on at midnight. That's helpful to me. It catches me up on what's going on in the world. Great. And I'm with you every night.
Thank you.
I'm thinking about you. And you all have a good Christmas, okay?
Okay.
Merry Christmas.
Bye-bye.
You got it. Well, she didn't want to know about the movie, but that was very kind of her, Stephen.
Very nice.
Very kind. And by the way, when you were on with me in October, what kind of response did you have later on? Because people really loved it.
Yeah, it was the best response I ever had as far as book sales went up. So it was great. I mean, it was a wonderful audience, and I corresponded with some of the people who were on the show.
Good for you.
I mean, who were listening to the show, excuse me.
Well, you know what? It's so important to our audience. That's why this program's so interactive, Stephen, that the guests really do start to relate with the people who listen, and they email each other back and forth, and it's really an incredible moment.
Really, yeah, is. Well, if people want to go to HollywoodStories.com and email me, I'll sure respond.
Let's go to Dominic in Calico, California. Hey, Dominic, thanks for calling.
Hey, George, how you doing there?
Good,
how you guys doing? Just wanted to wish you guys a Merry Christmas. And
thank you.
Just wanted to say, of course, like I'm sounding so cliche, but favorite movie's got to be The Grinch. And it's so funny that I just wanted to share my younger niece. She cries with Santa Claus all the time, and we had a Christmas party. And it's funny, my neighbors had all the characters dressed up, and she cried for everybody except for being with the Grinch. She didn't cry for him at all. And it was so strange.
Oh, really?
She loves the Grinch. She'll cry for Santa, but if you got someone dressed up as the Grinch, it's so funny, you think she'll cry for that, but she won't.
Yeah.
Favorite characters.
Yeah. Well, Chuck Jones had a little dog when he was growing up that he based Max on, and he said that Max was kind of the audience in that movie, that Max is watching, Max the dog is watching with horror what the Grinch does, and gives the audience identification. So that was an important thing. Yeah, it worked out very well. Right, you're talking about the cartoon or the movie with Jim Carrey?
I think it was the cartoon.
Yeah.
Let's go to Kalispell, Montana. Sean is with us. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, George. How's it going?
Good. Thank you.
All right. Happy New Year to you guys. I got a good trivia one for you.
All right.
When I was a little kid, my mom showed me this movie one time. We watched it together, and it's an old, old movie, but in it, the couple in a big city, they were both really, must have been like Depression era, but they were both really broke, and the guy had an expensive watch, and the gal had really pretty hair, and she went and sold her hair to buy
the gift of the Magi.
For his watch. Remember that?
The gift of the Magi.
Was that the gift of the Magi? Wow.
Yeah.
That was a Christmas movie, wasn't it?
Sure was. It was a classic.
I didn't know if that had gotten lost or if it was still around. I haven't seen it since I was a kid, and I just wanted to throw that at you as trivia. But who were the actors in that?
Now, that's a good question. The original story was written by O. Henry.
Wow. And he sold the watch to buy the comb for her hair, and she sold her hair to buy the fob for his watch. That was awesome.
It's one of those
anyway,
classics.
You guys, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
All right. Thanks.
One of the classics. And we're going to wrap things up here with you, Stephen. I hope you had a wonderful Christmas, by the way. So what's the new year got for you, Stephen? What's up?
I'm working on the second book and giving tours and doing radio interviews, and the second book's coming along. The first one was like 20 years of research, so I can't say when it's going to be done, but I've got, you know, a ton of new stories for it. So looking forward to that. And it's plodding along with it actually.
Well, good for you. Would you give out your website one more time?
Yeah, HollywoodStories.com, and the book is called Hollywood Stories, Short Entertaining Anecdotes About the Stars and Legends of the Movies.
I love it. Stephen, be well. Enjoy your holiday, and let's kick off the new year in a grand style, okay?
You got it, George. Happy New Year, and Merry Christmas to everybody.
You take care. Stephen Shohet. Now, up next, we're going to be talking about the Book of Urantia, split show for you tonight on Christmas night, so get ready for that. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.